On our latest edition of the Warriors Weekly Radio Roundtable, Tim Roy caught up with Warriors assistant coach Jaren Collins and spoke about rookie James Wiseman and life in the Collins home during COVID.
Well, Coach, let's first of all start with last night, and obviously that's a nice win, a well-played NBA game for the most part. What are your thoughts on that game, and how big was that win coming off the road trip?
The win was absolutely huge. We had some difficult games. Obviously, the game down in Tampa against the Raptors was embarrassing for everybody involved. And it was nice to see us bounce back after a hard-fought Atlanta game where we just had some mental errors and lapses with needless fouls. So it was nice to see our group bounce back, show the determination and the resolve to finish the game out. When they kept trying to, deliver haymakers from the three-point line, we responded, and guys showed up defensively and made key stops that we needed to, and Steph's brilliance took over the game.
Yeah, it seemed there was a little bit more of a bounce in their step than we have seen in recent days. You know, teams go through ebbs and flows, as we know, through the course of the season. You know, what will it take maybe to keep that sort of energy going? Would obviously a successful homestand would help, but in your mind, what's important to keep that moving forward?
I think the key really has to be on the defensive end and just focusing in, obviously defending without fouling, taking away middle drives, controlling with what we can control with, just sticking to our game plan, and just really keying in on that end of the floor, getting stops and then running off of our stops is absolutely crucial, because if we're not stopping anybody, we don't give ourselves a chance. And then I would just say on the offensive end, just continue to set screens and keep the ball moving. So obviously Steph's going to command two in most pick and roll coverages, whether he has an opportunity to turn the corner or get a quick shot. If he doesn't have it, get the ball out of the double team and play 4-on-3 on the backside with James Wiseman, either rolling to the rim or playing out of the dunker.
You know, it's interesting. You, of course, have handled the defense this year, and you've done a great job with the team throughout the course of the season. Could you, without giving away any state secrets, could you explain maybe in layman's terms the difference between defense in the NBA, maybe even defense in college or the high school level?
I would say in the simplest terms, I would say 2 to 3 feet. And what I mean by that is your help side and your weak side positioning has to be as close to the nail or underneath the basket as possible. Because if you're 2 to 3 feet out of position, the guys that you're playing against, their level of athleticism, their quickness, their ability to read and react off of your positioning or lack thereof is huge. And so I would say just by being in the correct position, 2 to 3 feet closer to the nail, closer to being able to trap the box, is absolutely crucial. And then obviously there's a physicality, gamesmanship that comes with it at this level. You're playing against, whether you're, say, the Atlanta Hawks, you're playing against Gallinari, you're playing against Lou Williams, Trae Young. You're playing against these guys that are masters at creating contact. So you got to be able to do it without using your hands and proper technique and proper angles of approach in your closeouts. You got to be so disciplined defending at the point of attack.
Yeah, historically, the NBA has always had this, people have always said, oh, nobody plays defense up there. And once you get to the league and you watch it, close to, face-to-face, or in your case, play in it and then coach it, you realize the defense is there, just that the offense is really darn good.
Yes. The offense, they're going to score. The best teams in the league, they're going to score over 100 points. So if we're talking about playing in the margins, well, what does that mean? We're talking about keeping teams off the free throw line. You're talking about limiting three-point shots by running guys off the three-point line. Getting them to shoot long twos instead of you know, open threes. So you got to play in the margin because, you know, these guys are really, really good at getting to their spots. And you're just trying to go make them go to their plan B and plan C opposed to their using their plan A.
We're talking with Jared Collins here on the Warriors Roundtable on your home for Golden State Warriors basketball, and that is 95.7 The Game. And Coach, the guy who gets more talk on the Warriors maybe than everybody except Stephen Curry this year is James Wiseman. I guess that's part of the territory when you're the number two pick in the draft. But tell me, the last night I loved his energy, loved what he was doing out there on the floor, and you know, somebody asked me today if the club is running more pick and rolls just as a way to keep him, you know, occupied, keep him involved on the offensive end. What's the theory and the strategy behind running maybe a few more pick and rolls every now and then?
It is analytics. I mean, this James or Steph Curry in a pick and roll yields the most points per possession. So we're just trying to run more pick and rolls, and it's easier to execute. Steph and James have spent time after practice, just the two of them, working on when to dive, when to set and hold a screen, because there's a lot that goes into, oh, just go run a pick and roll, just go it. Well, to execute that properly takes timing, when to flip a screen. If you see your defender and when you're coming up the floor in a step up and they're trying to keep the ball on one side of the floor, well, that's an opportunity to flip your screen to try to set stuff free to the middle of the floor. So there's, I think one of the biggest things that we've seen is that James is really starting to grasp the concepts in terms of setting the screen, getting out of it, diving with force because he puts so much pressure on the rim. If he doesn't get the ball, the weak side defender has to tag him. So he doesn't get the alley-oop, and that should free up somebody on the weak side of the floor. So there's a lot of offense that can be generated just by that simple action.
Would it be safe to say that this year, in his first NBA season, that this is the first time that he has dealt with anything super sophisticated on the offensive side and the defensive side when you look at his experience overall?
I would say that he's 20 years old, and he's played three games of college basketball. So there's, yes, he has a knowledge and an experience that he's yet to gain, and he's gaining it through repetitions out there on the floor. So whether it's, it's everything from positioning, verticality, using his voice out there on the floor, where to be, Draymond gets the ball in the pocket, what should be his reads when he gets the ball in the pocket after coming out of screen and roll. So there's just so much learning that needs to take place and is taking place. And what you want to see is just, you know, you see the growth and just going out there. And again, so much of it is just control with what you can control and just playing with energy and enthusiasm and just being the hardest worker out there on the floor, just flying around with a lot of energy. We'll make up for a lot of stuff.
Warriors coach Jared Collins, my guest here on the Warriors Roundtable. I'm Tim Roy. And coach, let's get to some of the important stuff here. When you work in the NBA, whether it be a broadcaster or a coach or a player or even PR guys, whatever, a lot of time is spent away from family. So give us the update. How is the Collins family doing, and how are the kids, and what is interesting them these days?
Family and kids are doing well. Unfortunately, I did lose my uncle to COVID recently.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're all dealing with the realities of this pandemic, and I appreciate you asking. My wife and children, they're doing fine. My daughter is getting ready to graduate sixth grade, and you know, where did the time go, sort of thing. And I know you know how that goes. But no boyfriends yet. So, we're not there.
Oh.
No significant others yet. So, everybody's doing well. And, so we're hanging in there.
You know, it's funny, you know, when you go back and think about your childhood, is it hard to relate to your kids today just simply because – of the world is so much different than maybe even when you were in the sixth grade or in junior high?
I think so, and I think it's also a challenge with social media nowadays, and TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat and all the different platforms, and you know, making sure that your children either aren't on them, and if they are using them, what's being said, what's being communicated, and so just making sure that you just, but like any parent, just making sure that you're active in your children's life and know what's going on. But there are definitely differences and challenges that I didn't, or different realities that I didn't have to deal with, especially with the social media thing.
And how much does parenting help you with coaching your basketball children, or vice versa?
Coaching my basketball children. So my son and my youngest daughter, they enjoy playing basketball. They love it. They really love the grind of learning new skills and new drills and that type of stuff. They get a you know, there's going to be frustrations when they're picking certain things up, but they definitely have a love for the game and a love and a passion for it. So for me, it's just about just supporting them and just doing the best that allowing them to be the best basketball players that they can possibly be, just giving them that support and that love. My oldest daughter, she knows how to play basketball, but when it's all said and done, she'd rather read a good book. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Awesome. That's great.
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's great. You love that. You love when you see them pick up the books. My kids won't read books in front of me. They only read them when I'm not looking. So that's good.
I've got a great video of my oldest daughter. She's reading a book, and I think she's eating an apple or something like that. And directly behind her, the chair was situated. So directly behind her was the NCAA Women's Championship game in Stanford, Arizona. And it's like, so that just tells you where she's at right now. So that she was enthralled in the book. So there you go.
Good for her. Hey, Coach, always a pleasure to talk to you, Jaron, and look forward to talking some basketball with you again sometime real soon.
I appreciate it.
We also caught up with Denver TV analyst Scott Hastings on the new look Nuggets.
Well, Scott, first of all, it feels like forever since we saw you guys. You know, it's been a long time with the COVID.
Yeah, I think Mark Jackson was still the coach champion, and you were 16. Yeah. We were the three, and you upset us. But that's all on. We've beat each other since then.
Yeah, we have. Harrison Barnes is now a king, so that's true. But you guys have had an exciting year, and it seems like you guys are peaking now at a very good time, and it's a different ball club from the last time we saw. Give me your rundown on this season to the moment for Denver and the changes they made and how impactful they have been.
Well, listen, they had to make a trade. They made a trade. They got rid of Gary Harris. And listen, Gary's been great here, and he kind of helped start the reemergence of the franchise and has been here for a while. And defensively, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody defend Devin Booker better than he does. And a lot of guards, Donovan Mitchell, I'm not sure if the Nuggets come back in the bubble from down 3-1, because he missed those first handful of games. He comes back and, you know, they go on and win that series 4-3. And just he's just a brilliant defensive guard. The problem is, you know, he's missing, you know, on average the last 3 or 4 years, 25-plus games a year. And, you know, here you got a chance, and they traded for Aaron Gordon. They had lost Jeremy Grant in the offseason, who played well in the bubble. And, you know, I think Jeremy's probably a better overall scorer, but I think that Aaron's probably a better overall player when you count, you know, offense, defense, rebounding, all the pieces together. He's a much better defensive player than I even realized. But, you know, him being in Orlando all these years, you see him twice a year. But it's been good. They haven't lost a game since the trade, which, you know, is rare. So they're 5-0 since the trade. They've won 6 in a row. They've moved up the first place in the NBA as far as offensive efficiency. we did a stat to him the other day. And listen, you know, I'm talking to you who's seen some of the greatest offenses in the world over the last decade. But their offensive efficiency with the starting five that they have with Murray, Barton, Gordon, MPJ, Michael Porter Jr., and Nikola Jokic was at 133.9.
Wow.
Their offensive efficiency, and their defensive efficiency was an even 100. Well, you're supposed to win a lot of games like that, right? And it's a very, like I said, unless they don't have the shooters that you guys have when you're rolling. They don't have Kevin and Steph and Clay and all that stuff. But they are selfless like you guys were in your championship runs. And that's been the fun part. I mean, I know you and I are kind of old school guys, but to see basketball being played well and no egos involved as far as, oh, it's my turn to shoot because you shot the last two, it's kind of been fun. And that's kind of been their secret so far, to be honest with you. I think this year when they get 31 assists in a game, they're undefeated or something like that. So it's fun basketball to watch, to be honest with you. And now that you've added Aaron Gordon, there's actually a little bit more defense being played as well.
You know, you played at the highest level in the NBA, and I've seen it in high school and in other places, and I saw it with the Warriors. It's kind of contagious, isn't it? When the ball moves, everybody stops worrying about, you know, is this my only touch? They move the ball because they know eventually they're going to get it back, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I played and was lucky enough to be on a team that won an NBA championship in Detroit. And you know, a lot will be said in their history and the Bad Boys and all this, and they were this and that. But they were selfless. And, you know, one night it might be Joe Dumars going crazy. And that was great. You were going to feed him until he was done. Next night it might be Isaiah. The next night it might be Vinnie Johnson. Then Mark Aguirre came on. And yeah, those are great names and big names in the league. But when you got a team that does, there's no ego between all those guys, they're all, you know, either college or Naismith Hall of Famers, it is fun. And, you know, Denver, and listen, you got to get lucky. As you guys know, sometimes in a draft or a free agent, he blooms, blossoms more than you expected. But, you know, Nikola Jokic has been, you know, a godsend to this franchise. And, I mean, you've seen him play. He's different than any other guy that I've seen, you know, come into this league and make a name for himself. And he has brought a, I don't care what I do tonight. I don't care if I got 10 points if we win. And, you know, he had a game this year where they lost, I think they lost in overtime to Sacramento, and he had 50. I think he had 50, 15, and 12 for some stupid, you know, triple-double. And he, you know, he was amazed. I don't care what I got. We lost a game. That's all that matters. And it is refreshing to see that the bottom line is the W and nothing more or nothing else.
What's the impact? And Aaron Gordon's a Bay Area kid. He played down in high school ball down in San Jose. And I was curious at the time of the deal because I thought, wow, you got Porter Jr. and Gordon. What's the impact of having those two guys who are really athletic alongside Jokic, who is not?
Well, here's the funny thing. And they're two different players, although they're both very athletic. Porter Jr. is a pure shooter. I mean, he could fit in on your team with Clay and Steph. I don't think he's at their level, but for a guy who's 6'10", 6'11", I mean, you just look at his numbers and what he's done this year. Probably, if it weren't for what Jeremy Grant's doing in Detroit, if you look at a player who's improved from last year to this year, I mean, he could be up for that award also. He's just a pure scorer, almost, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, pretty. I mean, he's pretty to watch. And Gordon has a more of a blue-collar game to him, to me. Now, what they've both done with Nikola Jokic, and you've seen how he can pass, they've learned that if they move without the ball, he will find them. Before last night's game, in Gordon's first 25 field goals as a Denver Nugget, 20 of them were assisted on, and 11 of those 20 were assisted on by Nikola Jokic. So he has learned if I set a screen, someone steps out and hedges an eye back cut, the ball is going to find a way to me. So that's the way they play, because maybe they are so athletic. And like I said, Michael can spot up, and he'll do, you know, a dribble handoff with Joker at the top. And if you try to go under it, he's going to pull up and shoot a three. And Gordon is more of that. And I saw a pick and roll with him the other day. He comes up and sets a screen. Gordon rolls, and all of a sudden here comes a dump pass and a dunk for Gordon. So they're both athletic, but they both are kind of doing it in different ways.
Talking with Scott Hastings, the television and radio commentator for the Denver Nuggets, a former NBA veteran and, of course, part of the champion Bad Boys in Detroit, right here on the Warriors Roundtable on your home for Golden State Warriors basketball, 95.7 The Game. Jamal Murray missed your game the other night. That's nothing long term, I hope, right? Just a little soreness?
Yeah, they use knee soreness. You know, I've heard, you know, in inner circles that it might have just been resting him and so on and so forth. But, you know, the offense without him, and Monte Morris is like the quintessential backup point guard. They move him in to start. And I think, you know, even with Murray out of the game, they had 72 or 74 at halftime.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just it Joker is the key. I'd hate to play a game without Nikola Jokic.
Right.
But any other piece they've been able to plug in, and they play pretty well.
Hey, what's the impact of Michael Malone and the fact that he has been I think continuity is so underrated in our league, but the fact that he's been that voice in the locker room for a lot of these guys as this team has kind of made its road toward the top. What's his impact on this team?
Well, first of all, you know, and you know him from his time there, you know, I think he came in to kind of shore up the defense and make them more of a half-court team. And Denver, you know, forever and ever is about run, run, run. If you look at pace of play, I think Denver's 29th or 30th in the league as far as pace. And yet you look at offensive efficiency, they're number one. So that means you've done something in the half court. He will always preach defense until the cows come home. The team buys into it. The biggest thing for me is your two young core players, and Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, have bought in. And when you can do that, then everybody else fits. Aaron Gordon had a post-game interview the other night, and they say, what's it like playing for Nikola or playing with Nikola? And he goes, man, it's cool because you sit there and listen, and you're just trying to learn what he wants. Well, that's what you hear about the coach. And what Nikola wants is really what Michael Malone wants. And we always talk about the extension, having a coach on the floor as an extension of the head coach. Nikola Jokic is kind of that. I've been around and doing the Nuggets team for a long time. I don't know if they're good enough to win a championship, but they're fun enough to watch. And on certain nights, you know, there's no one in the league they can't beat. And it should be really interesting. The Western Conference playoffs will be interesting no matter who gets in, especially with all these play-in games and such.
Hey, final question for you, and I want you to see if you can remember something for me. Now, a few years ago when the Warriors were in the playoffs against the Rockets and Kevin McHale was the head coach, somebody came in the press room afterwards, and, you know, when he was doing his press briefing, and they said, what did you think about the physical play? And he kind of laughed because physical play, I didn't see any physical play out there. You know, so he started laughing about that. You played the time where the league was really physical. Was there a play or something you remember that maybe even took your breath away during that era of play where it was really like, wow, did you see that?
The funniest, it was funny to us at the time, and I'm going to talk to two guys. One was a really, really good friend of mine, and Danny Roundfield, and the other guy I became really good friends with. And kind of introduced him to me by telling this story to him, and he remembered it. But the late, great Maurice Lucas. And Maurice was playing in Phoenix. We had come in, you know, in Atlanta at the time, and we were on a streak. I think we might have even been first in the Central Division. Our first game out west was going to be against Phoenix. And listen, you remember Danny Ramfield? Danny Ramfield was some small boy or nothing. I mean,
that was a big man.
And he got up, and he and Maurice got tangled up in the air, and Maurice basically WWE suplexed him and threw him hard to the ground. Now, this is the time when you know, we saw the little fight the other night between Schroeder and what's his name in Toronto, and we're like, you know, benches kind of come out. Well, this scenario, when somebody got thrown down to the ground, the benches came out. But it was Maurice Lucas, okay? and he did it right in front of our bench. And I remember, because I'm kind of working my way into being a quote-unquote tough guy, we all stand up, and Maurice just bends over rounds. Danny is writhing on the ground in pain. And Maurice bends over, puts his hands on his knees, gets over in Danny's face and says, "Damn, Rounds, that looked like that hurt." and then whistle blow, he just walked over to the Phoenix bench, timeout, we're all just looking, didn't no one step on the floor? And Danny was our, like I said, he was one of my dear friends. But that was the league. And I think Maurice got a foul.
Loose ball foul.
It was a loose ball foul. Nowadays, he would probably be, the flagrant two. The league would probably fine him another 25,000, and he might have even missed a game or two. But, yeah, that's when I saw when I knew it. I was still fairly young in the league, and I saw that. And plus, that was Maurice Lucas. So we all said, okay.
Awesome. Thank you, Scott, as always. I appreciate your time, man.
Can't miss seeing you, man. Can't wait till we get back together.
Thank you all for listening to Warriors Sound. Search Warriors wherever you get your podcasts.